Welcome back to the Daily Nugget, Daily Property Insights, 7 days a week, one property question, 20 minutes or less. Myself, Lawrence Lotz, and as always, today joined by Matt Harris, property tax specialist and fellow property investor. Matt, question to you today for the Daily Nugget. Talking about investing in property offshore, talking about people based in New Zealand that likely might have an investment property overseas or might look into it, and how to go about it and what's there involved with it.
Good to be here today, Lawrence. Great question. So we deal with a lot of overseas investors or expats coming back to New Zealand or new migrants coming into New Zealand. And quite commonly, property will be part of their asset base. So they've either left a previous owner-occupied property behind and they're renting it, or they were property investors before they came. It's not as simple as it would seem to own an offshore property from a tax perspective. So there's a couple of things that investors need to be aware of. First of all, if you are a New Zealand tax resident, you are liable to tax on your worldwide income, and that will include rents that are derived. So commonly I get clients who don't even say anything about an offshore property, and then suddenly they'll ring me up out of the blue and be like, hey, I'm thinking about selling my UK property, which I've never talked about and never returned. And we have to go back and amend tax returns and get that overseas income in. So first thing to note is that you are taxable on worldwide income. So you have to bring the net profit from the investment property in the other country into the New Zealand tax net. And there's a number of things that need to be considered in terms of the differences and deductions between the two countries. For example, Australia now doesn't allow travel expenses where New Zealand does. New Zealand doesn't allow interest expenses where Australia still does. And interestingly enough, under the new interest deductibility rules, the government of New Zealand's not going to allow interest on properties at home. But if you own a property overseas, they still will. So you have to adjust the return and apply an exchange rate. And there's a number of different rates that are published by the Inland Revenue that can be used. So that's the really simple part of it. Outside of that, there's actually a couple of regimes that apply to offshore properties that aren't so simple. So one of those is the financial arrangement rules, which probably a lot of people listening to this have never heard of. But effectively, they apply to money lent and money borrowed. And a common example is if I borrow money in the UK or have a mortgage in the UK. And imagine it's quite a large mortgage because there's a lot of exemptions on the rules. And if you have under a certain amount of mortgage, it's not applicable. But imagine it's £1 million mortgage. Every year, I would have to theoretically return the exchange fluctuation. So if the New Zealand dollar appreciates against the UK pound, then I make a gain on that mortgage, which is taxable. Conversely, if it depreciates, then I make a loss. So that's something that's not policed very much by Inland Revenue, but they, in times where you have big swings in exchange rates, the last major one I remember was GFC, but more recently with COVID-driven exchange rate variations, then sometimes Inland Revenue can have a look at that. So that's something that you need to take advice on. It's not always applicable, but you need to be aware of whether if you're a higher net worth individual, then it probably does apply to you. And most prudent people would opt into those rules and calculate the exchange rate variation every year and carry it forward and offset. The other one, which is a little more niggly, is if you pay interest to in the other country. So you've got a loan, you've got an investment property in Australia and you've got a loan from National Australia Bank. You derive rental income and you pay that loan in Australia, then you are effectively treated by the New Zealand government as paying an interest stream to an offshore resident, in which case non-resident withholding tax applies. So you have to register for NRWT and you have to pay it. There is a concessionary regime called approved issuer levy, and you can register for that and pay 2% levy instead. So a lot of people opt for that. If we're talking about Australia specifically, if the Australian bank that you've borrowed from has a branch in New Zealand, ANZ being a good example, then you don't have to pay interest. So it's one of those things. you don't necessarily have to be worried about it. You just need to be aware of it. And in this historically low interest rate environment, the approved issuer levy on most people's interest payments is very low anyway. Yep. It is a compliance, bit of a compliance nightmare.
It sounds like it. I'm just like, my mind just going, this sounds way too hard. You know, if you think of how many expats come out of the UK and have been there, obviously at the moment in COVID, it's not as much, but a couple of years ago, they would go there for 3-5 years, you know, get themselves a little a townhouse apartment or so forth, and then come back here. And it just sounds eye-watering of, you know, it's crazy that New Zealand, I didn't realize that the New Zealand system taxes you on your worldwide earnings if you're a citizen. Yes. So I'm in the UK, I buy an apartment. Let's say it's freehold.
Yep.
I come back to the UK. I come back to New Zealand as a tax resident, and now I'm making, I'm just going to use a round number, I'm making $10,000 in the UK. Do I pay the UK government tax on that $10,000 and the New Zealand government on that?
Yep. So let's use an example of £15,000, and that way you're over the tax-free threshold in the UK, which is roughly about £10,000.
Yep.
The answer is yes. You pay in the UK. Mm-hmm. You get a tax credit, and then you pay again in New Zealand, and you can apply the tax credit. So the double tax agreement between our two countries should limit the incidence of double taxation. It doesn't always. If your tax rate in the UK is higher than your applicable tax rate in New Zealand, you do not get refunded the difference.
Yep.
But if we're talking, and this is might be something for a little nugget for listeners, is if you're a new migrant to New Zealand, or you have been offshore, so you're a New Zealander who's been living offshore for 10 years or more, then New Zealand has a very, very good transitional residency exemption, which is effectively a 48-month period from the time you arrive back in New Zealand permanently, where you can ignore all forms of offshore income, apart from employment income.
Yep.
So that's interest, dividends, rental property income, anything like that. So if you are one of those people, you can leave your investment property overseas for a few years, figure out what's going on. And then if you don't want to comply with the rules, you can sell that property and repatriate the gain to New Zealand. New Zealand won't seek to tax that gain, provided that it wasn't purchased whilst you're in New Zealand and Brightline period applies. But it's a really good exemption, and if you are a new migrant or are returning to New Zealand and listening and you haven't looked into that, I suggest you do, because you opt out of it automatically in two ways. One, if you apply for working for families tax credits, and the other, if you file an income tax return in New Zealand during your transitional residency period, including offshore income. And both elections are irrevocable, which is a fancy way of saying you can't take it back.
So one more thing to throw at you, Matt, a little curveball on this one. As a lot of New Zealanders, they both have British passports, New Zealand passports and British passports, right? Again, we're going to go to the UK just because of the relationship we have there between the two countries. I own a property in the UK. I come over to New Zealand. I'm back in New Zealand, but I've got both passports. Where's my tax liability in that instance? Still the same, even though I'm a citizen in both countries?
Good question. So common misconception, the difference between residency, permanent residency, and tax residency. Tax residency is done on either a permanent place of abode basis, so that's something where you can live, or if you don't have a house, it's where the centre of your social and economic ties are. But generally, the Inland Revenue and court cases have said that you must have somewhere where you can live. You don't need to own it, but you must have it. Or it's a day's test, and so it's easy to become resident. You only have to be here for 183 days in a cumulative 12-month period to trigger tax residency. But to not be a tax resident, you have to leave for 325 days in a cumulative 12-month period and not have a permanent place of abode. So the passport bit is irrelevant, but what is relevant is when you spend an equal amount of time in both countries, that is what's referred to as a dual resident. It's a little more complicated, but effectively what the double tax agreements do is they apply what's called a tiebreaker test, and they try to figure out where the centre of your vital interests are, and that's who gets the first taxing rights. And I say the first taxing rights because consider this example. You have an investment property in New Zealand, you have investment property in the UK, and you are a tax resident of New Zealand. So New Zealand says we tax you on worldwide income, so you'll pay on the New Zealand investment property and you'll pay on the UK property. UK says we only tax non-residents on UK-sourced income, so you pay on the UK property. So you don't escape it in both countries, but it's just one country gets it all and one country gets a little bit.
That is totally interesting. I don't know why you would want to invest in outside the country anyway, but hey, I'm guessing there's some benefits there.
Look, there is now. You know, New Zealand had this perfect sort of utopia for property investment. No capital gains, no stamp duty, no ring fencing. Interest was deductible. And the utopia's been eroded quite a lot. And I can see, you know, in places like Australia, which has a very comparable market, maybe a little more supply driven than ours, but they can still deduct interest. And New Zealand comes out and says you can't deduct at home, but you can deduct if it's in Australia. Well, I think, you know, I can see some people starting to cross the ditch for that. So we'll see.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks, Matt, for that as always. And if you have any questions for myself or Matt, you'll find our details in the description, depending where you're listening on, whether it's a podcast app or on YouTube or so forth, or any of the other social platforms. But thanks for joining again the Daily Nugget. Daily property insights every day, 7 days a week. One topic, 20 minutes or less, and hope to see you tomorrow.